Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. I had surgery early in the morning, so I got my bad hair hat on.
Just a minor thing, though. Just He's fine. Minor. Yeah. They cut off his arm. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, parts of it. It's Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, Two Straight Up, brought to you by?
By AmericaCitizenPress.com and Denver Cinegenics and Dr. Julie McCallan.
All right. Amazingly, finally, after 6 weeks, the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial came in. Justice for Johnny. He got awarded $15,350,000. It had to be cut down because of limits on punitive damages. So he got $10,350,000. She got $2 million. Apparently, the jury had awarded her nothing at first, just didn't fill it in. And then after they told him you can't do that, you got to fill in one, they gave her $2 million. So he netted out $8,350,000, which is about his divorce settlement plus interest, but he gets his life again. All those people who have been hating on Amber Heard, which includes everybody who saw the show, she's got to appear in Cruel de Vil or something. This is just she's become the face of feminine evil.
We will get to that though in a few minutes. So just because I know people wanted to hear what we thought about that. We also have Mark Poff talk about the shooting in Texas coming up at 3:30.
But before all of that,
that's right. We're pleased to have with us CD7 congressional candidate, Republican congressional primary candidate, Eric Odlin. Hey, Eric, welcome back to the show once again.
Glad to be back, Chuck and Julie. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So the primary is the 28th, and the ballots drop, what, next week or pretty quick here, right?
They go out on the 6th of June, and everyone should start receiving them probably by the end of next week, early the following week.
Okay. All right. And then I guess let me kind of open-ended ask you just how's the campaign going?
I think it's going extremely well. So I won the assembly with 63%, making me top line on the ballot. We are out and about all over District 7. I feel like I'm the front runner. I mean, in absence of formal polling, we have internal data that suggests that. We just are sticking to our own strategy, driving to the finish line.
And I want to let people know, just in fairness, too, we are going to have just, you know, Laurel Eimer is going to be on the show on Monday. We try to keep it. And if Tim wants to be on the show, he can be on the show, too. You know, I always like to ask you guys this in terms of the kinds of things that people are hearing. I mean, the economy was bad when you started your campaign. It's only gotten worse and no indication that it's going to get better. What are people talking to you about? What are you hearing out there?
Usually around all of District 7, given that it's not predominated by conservatives, there's a lot of independent voters, 44%. I would say that's what most Coloradans, most constituents in District 7 are feeling the direct impact, whether that's the price of gasoline, because we've destroyed our energy independence, and we have an insane energy policy at this point that is hurting everybody and is having second and third order effects. Or just the out of control inflation that's a direct result of spending in Congress. So that's top of the concern. Conservatives are very concerned about immigration policy and the porous southern border, how that's impacting crime, how that is making a further drain on our economic resources, and you know, cartels and terrorist elements. There's a lot of concerns about the border. You know, we have all kinds of concerns, whether it's crime along the Front Range, the national security issues around the globe that are emboldened by the weakness of the Biden administration, the assault on our Second Amendment rights that is predicated by this very tragic shooting in Uvalde. There, everything is going wrong. And I think your audience probably recognizes that.
Well, you know, I see in all the lists of possible swing districts, 7 makes a lot of them as a potential Republican pickup. but probably not quite as much as some, but more than others. What do you get in the feeling about Biden's incredible unpopularity, including in Colorado? I think he's got 35% approval in Sivquis, and the whole question of how much of a red wave is going to happen in Colorado this year.
I think there are significant opportunities to pick up seats in Colorado and around the nation, but we can't rest on our laurels. We can't expect that even though Biden is pulling underwater, I think he's a 56% unapproval rate in Colorado, which is stunning for a Democrat president. But we are still going to be up against a tough fight, both in District 7, District 8. We'll retain 3, 4, and 5. But we have an opportunity to pick up two congressional seats if we have the right candidates and we play our cards right and we stick to the issues that matter to our respective districts in Colorado. It's not going to be easy, and Republicans need to get out and vote. My hope is that Democrats who would never vote for a Republican will just stay home because they've given up on the Democrats as well.
Well, it was interesting in our, we're in CD8 now. And Peg Prost, who was down in El Paso, was talking about all the efforts made in that congressional district to go to old age homes, because the Democrats go out there and they pick up 99% of the votes. A lot of the people are senile. The managers get paid. Are you making any efforts to have people? You have to go out now because this is when they're going out.
Yeah, the ballots drop.
Well, it's not in the ballots, but they're already at the old age homes. Are you doing that in the 7th District?
We are connecting with senior living centers. We're connecting with voters all over the district, not just Republicans. So that, for the primary, that's our predominant focus. But in the general election, there'll be a much more expansive effort to get independents and even those on the left who are ready for a change. But in the primary,
how about the tertiary stage of senility voters?
They're not doing anything.
People laugh, but up in Wisconsin,
well, the Democrats do it. I know.
Wisconsin, they picked up thousands of votes from old age centers. A lot of the people were literally. Couldn't even talk anymore.
Although they're under criminal investigation now, so it's not a good idea.
Well, they win and we lose.
We've got to be much smarter and much more vigilant in these elections. We know that the left is going to win by hook or by crook. They'll do whatever it takes, even undermining the election system and attacking it and censoring and all the shenanigans we saw in 2020. So we have to use similar tactics without compromising our principles, and we've got to outwork the left. We have to have people involved in the election process. I mean, Republicans need to take ownership, be poll watchers, adjudicators, get out there,
right,
be observers, and just not cede this system.
You know, it's interesting. I saw it must be working because Politico is doing an attack article about the Republican effort to be poll watchers. So like they would never do that, right? They're like, oh, Republicans, we've obtained secret audio tapes of Republicans telling people to sign up and be a poll watcher. It's like, seriously, give me a freaking break. But I mean, they must be scared, right? It must be working. And I know at where we are, they're doing a great job in Adams County. I get an email a day and I want to.
Yeah, but that's not a great job of going into old age homes. It's not collecting ballots. It's not the Republicans love camp. You know, one really bright person told me Republicans love campaigns. They love campaigning. They love going out for, let's say, the Commerce City Memorial thing. They are not good at election process. They don't know how election process. They're not good at collecting ballots. They're not good at the ins and outs. And there's almost no one in the Republican Party who's ever harvest a ballot in their life. And I have to say, I'll give John Caldera credit. He said, unless you pick up, start harvesting some ballots, you'll never win. And I'm afraid that's true. And I'm afraid the Republicans will fail again this time.
Oh, we're not afraid. We're not afraid, Jack.
Well, you ought to be smart then. You better go do it. I saw a surprise. I got one from your campaign showing you've been endorsed by Eli Bremmer. That will lose you a lot of votes, I'm afraid. There's no one who is hated by the base more than Eli Bremmer. who got 13%. So I would hide that endorsement under a table.
Chuck, I have a wide range of people. I mean, I have more, I have a significant range of endorsements from all over the state and the country, and that exemplifies how people are coming into my corner. There, I mean, Eli demonstrated pretty strong support relative to some of the other candidates in building coalitions, because that's what we have to do as Republicans. If we don't come together, we'll lose elections and we'll never make a difference in Washington. So I'm looking for allies. I don't have to necessarily agree with somebody on every position, but at the end of the day, I'm the one on the ballot. People need to assess my character and my positions, and I don't hide my positions. They're on my website. I've been on, I think, 50 radio shows this year alone. I have a lot of videos. Assess who I am.
And who are some of your endorsers from the grassroots in Colorado?
Grassroots.
You know who those people are?
He does, Chuck.
I'm a grassroots candidate, Chuck, because I don't have millions of dollars. I'm not a millionaire. I put a lot of my money into this race. I won the assembly.
Yeah.
63%.
That's impressive. That's impressive. Support. But who do you have endorsements from the grassroots? What grassroots people do you have endorsements from?
I'm fixing to bring it up my list. Give me an example of who you consider a grassroots person.
Tom Tancredo.
Well, Tom Tancredo did endorse me in the Senate race, but he'd already endorsed Laurel and he stuck with his guns. I respect him for that. But I have a wide range. I've got Nugent. It's a better grassroots endorsement than that.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. That's good. And real quick, just to clarify, Dr. Donna is asking us, who are the other candidates? In fairness, like I said, Laurel Eimer is running, and also Tim Reichert. Laurel and Eric went the assembly route. As Eric said, you got 63%. Reichert, I think, is largely self-funded and it went the petition route.
I know you tried to get on.
I'm bringing up my endorsement because I can't remember.
Don't worry about it. I'm sure it's on your website, right? You said,
yeah, you I think, got them all,
to be honest, it says something that Tom Tancredo, because I totally understand where he's coming from. He'd already endorsed Laurel, and you don't want to take that back. But he was endorsing.
How's your funding going? That's always so challenging for Republicans. And Democrats, it's so easy, and Republicans, it's so tough.
Well, it's a challenge for somebody with no political. I never came to this race with political connections. I don't have a wealthy family. I don't have wealthy connections. And every dollar I've earned has been through a significant amount of hard work. I've made over 2,500 calls in the last couple of months. That is significant work, cold calling people and asking for money, which is not something I enjoy or not necessarily my strong suit. I think especially veterans have a hard time asking for money, but we've raised over $400,000.
That's good.
Now it's been over a breadth of time, and we're highly competitive. You're going to see we're up on Fox News this week. You're going to be seeing a lot of material come out from this campaign, and we're reaching out to people, but I don't know if anybody's outworked me in this race. I'm everywhere. Somebody, one of my competitors who's now not in the race, asked me if I have a helicopter because I am all over this district, just grassroots campaigning.
Right. And somebody else is asking, hey, are we going to ask the same questions of Laurel? And the answer is yes. We pretty much ask the same kind of questions.
We always ask questions. Now, you know, we always like to talk to questions because that shows you how good the candidate is. So you don't technically live in the district, right?
I live in the district.
I thought you didn't live in CD7. I thought you lived outside.
I live in Pine. I live in the heart of the district.
Ah, so okay. Fake news. Fake news rumors fake are news. Out there.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
Well, there you go. There you go.
I'm in Jefferson County. I mean, there's a lot of people who lie out there.
That's true.
Have you been, because we talked to you early in the campaign, and again, you've always answered all of our questions straight up. Yes, you've been great. And has it been?
I want to, Oh, sorry. Can I answer go back to the endorsement?
Sure.
Real quick. Because now I'm looking at them and I'm recalling.
Okay.
I'm endorsed by the sheriff of Fremont County, sheriff of Teller County, the county commissioners of Teller County. I've got several other county commissioners who've endorsed me. I've got, if you look, go to my website, look at my long list of endorsements. One of the most recent ones, I was endorsed by Save America's Military PAC, who's started by Matt Lohmeyer. Some of you may have heard of him. He's Lieutenant Colonel Space Force commander who was relieved for writing the books on Marxism. But if you look at my list of endorsements, I've got a good range of both national level leaders, statewide leaders, and grassroots individuals. So yeah, there you go, great. Chuck. Sorry, I couldn't let
okay.
that
Okay, you answered that question fully and completely.
Final open-ended, where, if people want to find out more, because now is when you really need help.
Where can
financially,
they send your money?
Where can people send your money? Where can they volunteer? And where can they find out more about your positions and your endorsements?
My website's the best place to start. It's Odland, AAD. LANDFORColorado.com, OdlandForColorado.com. My endorsements are on there. My positions are on there. Videos, radio interviews. You can clearly understand who I am from my website.
All right. Great. Eric,
great.
Thank you.
Love talking to you and wish you all the best.
Thank you. You're taking some shots at me, Chuck.
Oh, I always do. That's our two straight up. You know, and this is the good part about candidates. Candidates who can respond. Anybody can answer a fluffball question, and when you ask a little tougher questions, the best comes out of people, and the best comes out of you in those. So that's when you find out, hey, this is somebody who can, because if you go to, once you're against Brittany Pedersen, you're going to get plenty of tough questions.
And he does the same thing to me, and I'm his wife,
yeah,
Eric.
Really.
So yeah.
I'm used to it. I'm thankful for it.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Best of luck, Eric.
All right, okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Let me real quick see any comments here. I kind of agree with Dr. Don on this, that I mentioned in a chat that endorsements are not what many people believe them to be. And then Charlene, no softballs on this show. Thank goodness. That's right. Well, and I'm going to give Eric this. I mean, every time he's come on, we've asked him questions and he gives you the answer, and we may not like it or we may like it and somebody else may not. I mean, well, but he gives you the answer.
There's no point in having a 100% softball questions, and we don't have them for Laurel Eimer either. And we like her and we like Eric, but if all you're going to hear are just the problem answers, you know, just go to the website and you never have to worry anybody. But I thought he did a good job.
He does a good job, as always. That's right. Real quick, I say that Mark Poff, we're going to get to him in about 10 minutes here to talk about the Uvalde shooting, but wanted to, Chuck has been his obsession, the debt trial.
I'm not sure what I'm going to do at 7 o'clock in the morning.
I can think of some things.
It's been a fascinating trial, and
the verdict was, now don't pay any attention. CNN would have you believe the verdict was split, that they both won, they both lost. Not true at all. It's clear from the verdict that the jurors overwhelmingly believed Johnny Depp, and they overwhelmingly believe that Amber Heard was lying about everything. They did not believe in the physical, sexual, any kind of, they didn't believe there's really any kind of abuse there.
Well, unless you go with somebody yelling at each other, which means there's no married couple in the world that isn't.
But even that, there was no defamation. I mean, there was nothing. They found that she defamed him, and that they gave substantial, it was a $10 million and then $5 million
punitive damages. Although he only gets $350.
Yeah, the law says he can't do that. So, and then what they did is they gave her, she had countersued saying that a statement that his publicist made, three different statements, defamed her. And they found that she was defamed in one of the statements his publicist made about essentially the publicist claimed that she faked a 911 domestic violence call. And I read that, and tell me what you think, Chuck. And they only gave her $2 million and then zero punitive. I'm thinking they didn't want to give her anything.
Well, they clearly not filled that out.
And then the judge sent him back.
And then just to get it over with, I think he said, okay, $2 million.
And I read that as perhaps some sort of a compromise verdict, that there might have been at least one juror in there who was saying, look, I don't believe Amber Heard, but I don't want to totally trasher. So why don't we just find this one little claim? I mean, that's how I read that. Mm-hmm. And I think the mainstream media who's been, what this has really shown is what a difference it makes when you can actually see the trial as opposed to reading it through the eyes of the corporate media, because right. through the eyes of the corporate media, Amber Heard won. And right. this is a shocking, you know, Amber Heard's rights as a woman have been, I guess she doesn't violated. Believe in jury rights either, just some rights Amber Heard likes. So,
well, she says it's a loss for First Amendment, as if defaming people is a good idea when and totally making up charges, which she clearly did. I believe the jury certainly believed that.
I think it's also pretty damning of the Washington Post and the ACLU, who wrote and published the right. editorial, or the column, while not even checking. Just, I mean, and hopefully this is the beginning of the end of the movement where some woman can, or anyone could just stand up and say, oh, this man abused me and he's a white guy and he's powerful. Therefore, everyone must believe me and I'm the victim here and I get my own TV show and I get to be an actress and I get to have editorials. I mean, and hopefully now men, and I guess it's going to be largely men can will realize, okay, no, you can stand up and say that didn't happen. That's not true. And fight it, you know?
Well, it cost him probably $6 million in legal fees.
He cheap. Lost, I know I'm saying it's cheap.
He lost over in London on the same evidence. I mean, the fact that the judge who they say.
Well, one was a judge, just a judge. This was a jury.
Yeah, well, to believe Amber Heard, and he did. I mean, he said he believed 12 instances of smash abuse. He believed four times in which she was in fear of her life. No one who watched that trial believes any of that. They just don't anymore. You know, the Rittenhouse trial is another one I was fascinated by. And, you know, I had no strong opinion whether Rittenhouse was a vicious, racist killer or a kid who just got in bad circumstances. After you watch the trial, I don't think anybody thought he should be convicted. And
right.
everybody thought the verdict was absolutely valid. All the people who didn't watch the one said, you know,
well, there are people
got away.
The left just weaponize everything, right? They don't care about the facts, right? They don't care that Johnny Depp's life was destroyed. The Washington Post, you know, based on zero evidence, they're letting Amber Heard just make these claims of sexual abuse and violence. The ACLU,
well,
because they
ambassador.
Want money from her. Yeah.
She is an ambassador for the ACLU for domestic violence because she's very good at domestic violence.
Yeah.
and the Washington Post has another stain on their, you know, soiled record. And the ACLU, I think, also gets an enormous stain on their record. Why you'd want to give it money to an organization that is that biased and
oh yeah, it's become, well, and this is from Karen Cattley. Me too is rather passe these days, isn't it? When the same people who jumped up and down can no longer define woman at all anymore. Yeah. You know, there you go. Just getting technical, Karen. If you're the left, you just weaponize stuff. Once again, it's my truth that matters.
That's right.
And in my truth, I can just say whatever I want anytime I want. And so hopefully this will, you know, like you said, you listen to this and she just like lied. She made it up. And I think the jurors clear. I mean, they didn't really for a trial this complicated. They had like some, you know, 27 questions or something like that. They had to answer. It was a complicated jury form for them to deliberate essentially what, not even really 2 days, you know, is, you know, I don't know. I think clearly they didn't believe it. There wasn't a lot of discussion.
Well, once again, if you have one juror, that's all it takes. It has to be a unanimous verdict. And so usually you have to make some compromises. And here they heard, you know, they filled it out for none. They got back, or give her two. You know, we were given Johnny 15, 350. So
yeah, it's not going to cost him anything. He just gets less.
Right.
And I think these, if I'm a juror, I know you said you wouldn't look at it this way, but I'm like, yeah, these are wealthy people. They don't, you know, the amount of money isn't, but I think what's even more important for Johnny Depp, which I think is really good, is he clearly won in the court of public opinion. Yeah. And I think that is going to do more. He was just saying he lost his life. He lost his ability to earn a living because of these false allegations. And now that's been shown to be false. People know, I mean, she's the one who's hurting career-wise. And I think hopefully he'll be okay. Yeah, but they're such weirdos in Hollywood, it's hard to tell exactly.
Well, I mean, it's. I have a feeling he'll try to collect that $8.5 million.
Right.
His manager stole $600 million from him, so at least.
Well, yeah, I can see Amber Heard. Here's a check, Johnny. Oh, it bounced. Sorry, I'll get back to you Tuesday. This from Steven. Rittenhouse should have never been charged. He was charged because he used an AR-15 to defend himself against a couple of dirtbags at a George Floyd riot. I mean, peaceful protest. And then from Charlene, woman is whatever you're told it is today. That may change tomorrow. and then she says the brown suit made him look down and out. Yeah, just interesting trial. We have like 2 seconds before we have Mark on the Sussman verdict. I wish Sussman had gotten convicted because I just think he should have been. On the other hand, though, what I suspect the jurors kind of thought is what that showed is, well, the FBI was lying. So, and I think there was clear.
It wasn't material. They didn't. When they brought in the agents from Chicago, they kept on asking, well, who's the source? And they wouldn't tell them. They say, well, it's a confidential informant. It was a lie. He's from the DOJ, which is a lie. It's clear. And Andrew McCarthy, the former federal prosecutor, wrote an article you can see on Real Clear Politics. He said, you know, the FBI was not duped. The FBI knew exactly.
They knew Sussman was lying.
Yeah. Well, not lying. They knew
he was making it up. Right.
Yeah, well, you know, and so they didn't care because the guys on the seventh floor, which is the leadership, right. McCabe and Comey, were hot to trot. And it really does show the rot at the FBI.
And I am not as troubled by that verdict because I think
I think it's a correct verdict. I mean, it's sad in the sense that, you know, it was a corrupt process where the judge had all these ties with
the jury. Yeah.
The jury were all these Clinton donors and stuff. Just shows you that to the extent that Durham plans to get convictions, he better do it outside of D.C.
But I think, though, what he did do, and I'm wondering if this might have been part of his whole thing, was he did indeed expose the Clinton campaign strategy and the coordination between the Clinton campaign, the FBI, Perkins Coie. What did Tucker Carlson say? The FBI, can you guys believe this, has an office in the Perkins Coie law office building? I'm like, what?
I'm surprised they didn't have one over at the Clinton
headquarters. Well, why not just move it on to the DNC?
Yeah,
run home. It's like, talk about, you know, being in bed together. Holy cow. So, but I think the Durham trial did do that. Now, you know, it allows the corporate media to ignore it, but I think
I mean, there was Chris Gliese from CNN said, this takes a dagger into the Trump conspiracy.
Right, completely ignoring the fact that during the trial, the FBI admitted, they didn't convict him because they knew he was making it up because they were in on him making it up. I mean, that's what the trial revealed, that there was this depth of collusion and corruption between the Clinton campaign, the DNC, the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the Obama administration. They were all in on it. It was all a hoax. It doesn't put a dagger in it. It proves it. But again, you know, fortunately, nobody's reading those organizations anymore, you know.
Well, some people are.
And let's see, when have the Clintons or any Bolshevik Democrat ever been held accountable?
Never.
Well, there we go. Tell me again
why
we have an FBI.
In order to do phony investigations on garage nooses and make up Whitmer kidnapping plots.
That's right. And if you happen to wander into the Capitol or near the Capitol on January 6th, they can go after you there too. So that's enough on that week. There's plenty more to talk about. There's a lot of interesting stuff continuing to come out on that. And I do think it's important to talk about it, even though the left would have us not. But I wanted to move to Mark Poff. He filled in for us last week. Thank you for that, Mark.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and going to actually be filling in for us next Wednesday, too, because we have a Rev golf match. Former law enforcement investigator with El Paso County, currently has his own private investigating thing, but wanted to talk to him about this latest Texas shooting. So, Mark, hey, welcome once again.
Well, it's good to be here again. I'm still wearing my CSU. It's such a cold day. I woke up this morning and there was snow on the ground on Monument Hill.
Oh, we did
so
not have
June 1st and we had a trace of snow.
That's because of global warming, Mark.
Global warming.
But it's getting colder or, well, whatever.
Well, let me open-end it. General thoughts on it.
The thing that kind of bothers me is I was on the Lewis Palmer School Board for 12 years. I was the president for multiple terms. And I was on the board during Sandy Hook and Parkland. And so I kind of wanted to go through this because they make it sound as if we keep having all these school shootings and nothing's being done.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, here it is happening again. We still haven't done anything. And that is so not true. And the statement that it only happens in the United States.
Right.
This is the only place that this is a complete and total lie.
Right.
I think Russia's already had a couple school shootings in the last year. So it happens all the time. In fact, the largest school shooting or death happened in the Soviet Union back in 2004.
Well,
there's about 180 kids that were killed in one event where some terrorists happened
in Sweden and in France.
Scotland, we were talking to a guy from Scotland talking about, right.
So, but if you keep saying that same narrative, you know, it never happens here. You know, the Second Amendment is not absolute. You couldn't buy a cannon when they wrote that. I think the bottom line is, actually, I saw on Pawn Stars 3 or 4 years ago where they bought a cannon.
Yeah. So,
I mean, what a stupid-ass statement that you can't buy. I bet everybody who wanted a cannon and could afford a cannon back then had a cannon.
Right.
But the thing about school districts, because I was on the board, when I first got on the school board, we were currently building Palmer Ridge High School. And that was one of the first schools in the state that was built after Columbine.
Okay.
And it's the same thing with after the 9/11 shooting, you know, new airports or airports were redesigned because of 9/11. It's the same thing with schools. So what we have at Palmer Ridge, if you looked at our two high schools, you have Lewis Palmer and then you have Palmer Ridge. Lewis Palmer is one big, huge, massive building that has everything together. Then you go look at Palmer Ridge, and I don't want to say too much because it's still a security issue. You have the academic wing, and then you have the arts and athletic wing, and you have a bridge. And some people actually said something saying, you know, why did we pay all that money for a bridge in between these two separate buildings? You know, you're wasting taxpayer dollars. What they don't understand is there's basically an emergency button that could be hit by security that would lock that bridge down. So if you had an active shooter in one of the two wings, at least you would save those in the other wing. And another thing that comes up in school districts or in schools is they have the double doors, the vestibules.
Right.
Every school, it's my understanding now, we were really working towards this when I retired. We wanted every school to have these double doors where the outer ones are not locked and the inner ones are.
Right.
And if somebody comes in, then you have to talk with security.
Right.
Would then buzz you through the second series of doors. And if something went bad, again, they could hit a button and lock all the doors down and stick them in that area.
Right.
Which is really putting themselves at massive risk because they're the ones there with them to get shot.
Right. But put it behind bulletproof. You're right. I mean, that's all of these things. You're right. That I know I look at our son's school and that's exactly what it is. There's one point of entry.
Yes.
And everything else is locked. I don't even think you can prop a door open without an alarm going off, right?
Well, that's another thing we alarmed all the doors. So if somebody left the door open for so long, it would alarm back to security. They could click to that camera.
Right.
And then they could say, wait a minute, somebody propped that door open. And then they could go send a security person to secure it.
Well, but no matter what the system, I mean, over at Rev School, they did a great job. But one day I was over there and trying to find Rev and I couldn't. So I just jimmied the door a little, went right back open, and I went. I mean, it wasn't.
No, but that was after school hours, though. So.
Well, no, it wasn't. It was to pick Rev up, so it wasn't after school hours.
Well, here's another problem with that, kind of going along with what you're saying, Chuck, is the worst thing we could ever do is put a great big sign in front of all our schools that say gun-free zone.
Oh. Yes.
I mean, it's like, why don't we put a sign up that says soft target, shoot here?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And at Lewis Palmer, one of the things that we did after Sandy Hook is we actually hired our own armed security. We got our own head of security, and we started bringing in armed security, and they were concealed carry. So they were not out open carrying weapons, because who do you shoot? You shoot the one that has a weapon on his side, so you want to kind of hide.
Right.
And we would not tell anybody in our schools what staff was armed and what staff was not armed.
Right.
And I actually had a huge liberal call me up and just go freaking bat. Can't say that, crazy. And she goes, I want a list of every person in the school that my kid goes to that's armed.
No.
I'm like, not going to happen.
Right.
That's not how security works. So there has been a lot done since, you know, Columbine, Sandy Hook, and even after Parkland, they're trying to do stuff. But the problem is you get politicians involved that just screw the whole thing up.
Right.
Obviously, the shooting down in Texas was a complete cluster.
Yes.
One of the big things that came from Columbine, and I know this because I was in law enforcement, so I know this. Back with Columbine, it is secure and negotiate.
Right.
And that
was before Columbine.
Lives.
Right. Right.
So then they had to come up with this new strategy. And I know for even as a detective, once a year, I had to go through active shooter training. And it basically, the rule was the first two people that get there that are in law enforcement go in. And we were all, a lot of us were provided AR-15s, body armor. What, so we could actually go in and make it a fair fight. Before right. Columbine, most cops just had handguns. And actually, right. it had to do with the armed robbery in California as well. But then they started putting right. assault right. rifles. I hate to use that term, but it's so generically accepted. They gave us weapons, you know, and we carried them and we'd go in with that. Actually, active shooters changed.
Yeah.
Just in the last couple of years, it's now first person.
Right. Don't I saw the Aurora police chief, the interim Chief Oates, who was the chief during the Aurora theater shooting after Vanessa got fired, et cetera, et cetera. I was reading clarified. He said, you know what? Our policy, given what just happened in Texas, is not clear enough. And it said the first solo officer, solo or otherwise, in uniform or otherwise, not only should go in, but shall go in, has to go in immediately. There's no even waiting.
Confront the threat. Because right. they know from history, if you confront right. the threat, now they change it. There was a big church shooting down here. And what's sad to say is our churches are probably more secure than our schools are right now.
Right.
But the big, I want to say New Life.
Right.
If I remember right, it's just right down the street from here.
In Colorado Springs. Church. Right.
They had an active shooter come in. He killed a couple or three people in the parking lot. Soon as he came in, he was confronted by armed security, and one of them shot him in the ankle.
Right.
I mean, it was a bad shot, yeah. but it stopped the threat. Now he's right. thinking, crap, I just got shot.
Right.
And it changes everything. And I can't even fathom in this last shooting, how can you sit, you know, I think of this being a cop for 17 years, how can you sit there and not kick that door in or do, I don't really care what the chief of police would have said to me.
Right.
My response would, or my thought process, I hope, would have been, you know what? He's that dumbass isn't here. You know, he's sitting right. back wherever calling shots and, you know, and all this stuff is going to come out. Everybody is in sympathy mode right now.
Yeah.
And we still, and every day we learn something new or something changed.
And
we,
it's confusing, don't know if the door and something's prop. Changing. Right.
Close. Everything's changing. In time, we'll get to the truth. But as soon as that sympathy, and I hate to say this, when the funerals are over,
that's
after
true.
The parents are done sympathizing, you know, for their kids, they're going to get pissed. And they're probably pissed right now. And the lawsuits are going to come out. And it's just going to be a complete cluster. And to make things even worse, that idiot Joe Biden has got his Department of... Yeah, I shouldn't be calling our president that.
No, I'm just... That wasn't what I'm saying. I'm like agreeing.
But the Department of Justice has now said they're going to investigate.
Oh, because that'll clear things up. Yeah.
Because well, they're because such somebody, an expert. This is the same people who ran the Afghanistan exit strategy that got all those people killed. And they're going to tell... if there's
a running gas prices, you're right. Yeah, it's like that.
If there's a place that can make this right, it's Texas.
Right. Well,
here's my big problem. It's been my problem from the beginning. You know, the idea of having armed security is fine, but this is a perfect example. They had four officers who were dedicated. That was all they did was provide security for it. And the chief was the chief of this four-man group.
Oh, the school the police who, force. Right. The
school yeah. police force.
And where were they?
Well, he quickly came in a second after 2 minutes, 3 minutes after they, and quickly went what's called the Broward County response, which is you head the hell out of there before you get shot. And so just having armed security doesn't do you enough. And having the teachers armed does, because those guys are going to shoot because they're going to get shot. And so there's always going to be the Broward County
know.
Counties. There's okay. This chief was so, you know, beloved. He was elected to the city council, except that's not who you need when people are firing. You need somebody else. And if you're a teacher there and you've taken training and everything else, and somebody comes in with a gun, you're going to fire back.
Out
and
of self-defense. It's just yes. like, why would a pilot wreck a plane because he doesn't want, you know, not right. wreck a plane because he doesn't want to die in the crash.
Right.
I actually, and Chuck will, we may agree to disagree or whatever. I did not want to arm teachers, but let me explain why. I think you'll be with me on this. I wanted to arm staff, but not teachers. And this is what I was willing to agree to, was a lot of staff, and not so many teachers, but some teachers. And if these teachers qualified, if they were retired military or had training, we actually had some staff on our school district that were currently in the reserves and actually going to Afghanistan and Iraq and fighting. Who better to arm than staff? And they're not focused on the classroom. My worst nightmare was a teacher has a sidearm strapped on and a student takes it from them. And they're not properly trained.
Teachers. I think that's what we mean. Just people inside.
There are people there who really are in danger themselves. Self-defense is an amazing motivator.
It's a wonderful thing.
And just having officers who can be there, not be there, you know, in Broward County, once again, doesn't mean they're going to do anything. But if you have you have a larger number, so because this was kind of the worst case scenario where they knew he was out there. They were calling in as he breached the school. The school did have locked doors, but this door apparently wasn't locked.
We'll get to the truth of that.
Right.
And so you had everything except you had a cowardly head of security who had just taken active shooting class with him. And he knew the rules. He also knew the law of the jungle. And he said, screw you.
And that's what I want to ask you about, Mark, because there has been all of this focus from the left on, you know, we need to make sure that our police officers are using the right pronouns and that our police officers are not harassing the diversity within our community. I mean, the focus is on all of that. I would submit to you that it takes a certain kind of person and mindset who says, when push comes to shove, I will, on my own, run into the school and save those kids' lives, even though it might cost me my own. That takes a certain mentality. And when your whole focus is on having somebody who just makes sure they use the right pronoun and that we have like the pregnant, their tampons in the men's restroom at the police departments, that kind of thing, I think you're recruiting the kind of people who don't do that, who don't do what they need to do. They're two different mindsets sometimes, I think.
Well, isn't it? I think the Army was advertising for a while, you know, we want people that are willing to run towards the chaos or you know, go towards. Because typically when you hear gunfire, you want to go the other way.
Yeah.
You know, but in this situation, you want individuals that have that mindset. And you never know. Years ago on 9/11, on the 9/11, I had a guy pull an assault rifle on me.
Whoa.
And you really don't know how you're going to respond to a high stress scenario until it happens to you. I mean, anyone who says, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to go in there. It's like, you know, I'm not sure I believe you till it actually happens. And I ended up taking the weapon from him hand to hand, you know, which kind of confused me. Like he had it 1 second and then I had it the next. And it's like, okay, now what, you know? And so I'd like to think in that scenario that I, without hesitation, would have run in. I can't even fathom how you can sit on the other side of a door for 40 minutes. We're going to get to the truth. You know, we're getting all this propaganda BS right now. When we get to the truth, I mean, they all should be fired, obviously.
Right.
And this guy, why did he really want to get sworn in last night in hiding?
Real fast.
Well,
you know, because
I mean, I know
the cover-up's already beginning, but and the thing is, you hire to the lowest common denominator. And when you're hiring individuals and you're chastising them, well, you called me him, her, whatever, you know, all this politically correct stuff. You don't want cops going around just beating the hell out of everybody. We get that. And cops don't do that.
Right.
But you do have to have the mindset of, in this situation of running into a school, that SRO down in Florida set a precedence that is just inconceivable of, you know, I'm not going to go in.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, sorry, Sap, this you signed up for this.
Right. That's your
job. You got paid for 10 years based on that you were willing to run in there, you know, when it happens to you. And I really want to get to all the truth. I'm really pissed off that the feds are getting involved. They need to stay the hell out of it.
They're awful.
Yes. I mean, it's really none of their concern. And they're trying to say, and the media is backing them on this a little bit, that this is a national security issue. This is
YouTube is
that's true. Everything is. Well, if you really want to focus on a national security, then freaking seal up the border.
Well, that's because they want to start banning people from saying stuff about it, right? They want you just like COVID, any day now, if you criticize something or push a narrative about the school shootings that they don't want you to have, like maybe being in support of the Second Amendment, you know, they're going to ban Lauren Boebert because it's a national
or
security
NRA
issue.
Members will fire.
Right.
Right. And also one thing I definitely want to, I want to make sure that I say this right off the bat, when Joe Biden gets back to the White House and he says his stupid little speech that night, he says, when are we going to get a backbone to go against the lobbyists? So he makes this big deal. He didn't say after gun owners. He didn't say after Americans who want to carry assault rifles. He said after the lobbyists, because he knows that there's tons of Democrats that have weapons. And and then he mentions the 9mm. I'm sure they pulled him into a back.
Oh, they're already saying that.
For God's sakes, don't say anything about 9mm because that's all the Democrats own are 9mm handguns.
Right.
Well, you know, I would
say. It's not a powerful round. It's a fairly light round. And all of a sudden, it'll blow your lung out. Well, anything will blow. Yeah, 9 caliber.
He doesn't know what a high caliber is. He needs to look at a 30-06 if he wants to talk about high caliber. In fact, I used to make fun of 9mm because all real cops carry 40 calibers. But, you know, it's not a high caliber round. I mean, he's so obviously clueless about what he's talking about. If you asked me something about diesel engines, I'd say I'm not an expert on diesel engines. You know, the problem is the federal government under Joe Biden's leadership thinks they're experts in everything. And
well, they are.
Well, the facts don't matter.
You can have Pete Buttigieg in charge of transportation.
Oh,
and he gave his thing that he and his husband used to go down and watch the trains.
Yeah,
and you go, okay.
You're an expert.
That qualifies.
You're an expert.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and one thing because I've been thinking, obviously, I've covered school shootings. I've been at them and I've thought a lot about it. And to me, it kind of comes down to this is I think, you know, there is evil in the world and the evil slips in the cracks. And we need to always make sure whether the cracks are in, if you hear a kid saying you want to shoot up a school, maybe say something about it. The cracks are in, don't leave the door propped open. The cracks are in, harden the target. We can and shore up the cracks, right? And it's not that you fill one crack, well, then evil is evil. It's going to find another crack and try to come in. But I would argue that the Democrats, they know all this, but they would rather... To them, it's a war. And in war, there are casualties. And I think that to them, the issue and being able to keep this problem up there so they can fundraise off of it and they can fire people off of it matters more to them than combating the evil that is behind it. That's what I worry about.
And another thing about, you know, my problem with having a school resource officer being, you know, they have backup generators in most schools. Why? Because the generator goes. So you better have Plan B, if Plan A ain't there. And they had no Plan B. Yeah. They had a 4-man police force and a police chief who wanted to go, oh, it's a barricade situation. And then everybody else was just there to die. And that can't be the Plan B.
Right. And you're exactly right, Chuck. I mean, I think, you know, arming staff at schools is a smart thing. Having weapons lockers at school.
We
talked about that where all the individuals that have the training have the code, you know, a real quick little code and they can get to weapons. But the bottom line is they always say it's kind of like that show, The Weakest Link. You know, I guarantee you the staff member and I haven't heard her name or his name or whatever, who propped the door open. They know the door was propped open at some point.
Right.
And she says, I always look for the inconsistencies in the statement. And the statement was that person actually saw the shooter coming for the door and they ran, you know, to go tell people. I think the first thing I would do is, hey, I wonder if this door's locked.
Yeah.
You know,
and they said she just closed it and assumed it was going to lock. There's something. Well, and now everybody's lawyering up, right? They say the police, they're not talking to that cooperating. And it's like, well, I wouldn't cooperate with the Department of Justice either, frankly.
Yeah, and you got that right.
But I think, you know, because we got to wrap it up here, but I think like what you said is, you know, when they say, oh, there's only happens, there's so much about this that are lies. We know what to do. We just need to get the politicians out of the way to make them quit weaponizing this and go ahead. Could we keep other places safe? Right. We get the Denver Broncos. The Avalanche game was safe last night. You know, we know what to do. We just need to do it.
Right. And unfortunately, I think this goes along kind of what you were saying earlier, the Democrats, they want to destroy our country so they can rebuild it as a socialist country.
Right.
And so they have to let it get into this. They want to nationalize everything. Remember after 9/11, we got TSA, we got air marshals, all this other stuff. Ah. Don't be surprised after this DOJ investigation that they want to create some national SRO process where they control all the school resource officers and dictate the security of all schools because we know how to do it better.
Perfect.
Right, right. Well, Mark, thank you.
Thanks
for
coming on.
Yeah, you were great. Thank you. We appreciate it. Hey, guys, thank you to everybody on Zoom. There's been great comments there. Remember, you can catch all of our shows later and all the links to all of the podcast sites, Rumble and everything at chuckandjulie.com.
Mark will be back next Wednesday.
Mark will be back next Wednesday. On Friday, we have Mark Barrington coming on the show. And then on Monday, Laurel, we've got a ton of stuff coming up. So we will see you all later. Mark, thank you. Thank you to the great guys at BBS.
Stay warm down there.
Yes. It's freezing.
We'll see you all on Friday. Bye-bye. Party Friday.
Party Friday.